So it's important for us. And this is, session is meant to illustrate on stage the importance of the collaboration between many specialties when we are taking care of connectivitis. So we'll take, you can keep the light, please. You can keep the light on. It's interactive. So from A to Z, systemic sclerosis and beyond, challenges and limitation in diagnosis. So we would like in this patient to avoid these end stage images. We would like to avoid this end stage pulmonary hypertension. So what has changed in the guidelines, ESC guidelines and ERS guidelines regarding pulmonary hypertension are three important things. First of all, the pulmonary vascular resistance has been included in the hemodynamic definition of pulmonary arterial hypertension. Second, there is an updated algorithm, which we can show you at the end of the presentation. And there are new developments on regarding pulmonary arterial hypertension severity evaluation. How do we evaluate the patient and treatment goals that we want to achieve when we are taking care of these patients? So there are many challenges when we are taking care of this patient. The first challenge is the early diagnosis of systemic scleroderma. It's important to diagnose very early these diseases. The second challenge is the early diagnosis of pulmonary arterial hypertension in scleroderma patient. And the third challenge is the evaluation of prognostic factors in these patients and, of course, the treatment and how we should do the follow-up in these patients. So we will start by a clinical case, and it's meant to be interactive. So this is the case of Carol. So Carol is a 44-year-old girl which presented with Raynaud phenomena. Okay, the Raynaud phenomena has started 2 to 3 years before. She has arthralgia, inflammatory type of arthralgia. She has retrosternal pain, and when you look at her fingers, you see puffy fingers with some ulceration at the on her. So what is your diagnosis when you see this patient? Systemic sclerosis. Okay. If we take the recent recommendation, the ULR classification, and they have put this table, they say that you need 9 points to include a patient and to consider him as a scleroderma patient. So if we take this patient, this particular patient, she has a Raynaud phenomena, so she has got 3 points. She has puffy fingers, she has got more points, and the skin sickening. So if we add all these points, it will be 8. So it's not until now included as a scleroderma patient, even though as clinician and expert, we really consider her that she's a systemic scleroderma patient. So if you want to complete and to have really all the items and we want to have more than 8 points, we have to do the other parameters. So what would you suggest to do? Immunology, excellent. So one of the things that we should do is the immunological tests. So you do the ANA profile, and what do you suspect to have? Which one of these? Without voting, you can say it loudly. What? Centromere, anti-centromere, okay. So we are searching in this particular patient for anti-centromere antibodies. So the first message is signs and symptoms have been identified as necessary for the very early diagnosis of systemic scleroderma. If we want to take care of this patient, we can think about VDOS, very early diagnosis of systemic scleroderma. The patient should have Raynaud phenomena, of course. Puffy swollen digits turning into sclerodactyly, but before turning into sclerodactyly. And, of course, the presence of antinuclear antibody, specifically anticorps anti-centromere or anti-topoisomerase, which are known as anti-SCL70. And an abnormal capillaroscopy with scleroderma pattern. So that's what we call VDOS. In this patient, like you have the like you did now, just now, a pattern recognition. You said this is a scleroderma patient. Definitely, this is a scleroderma patient, and we don't need these 9 points to include her as a scleroderma patient. Okay, so the first message is to early detect this the diagnosis. When managing Raynaud phenomena, 3 screening tests we can use. Of course, we can use the ESR, the ANI, and the capillaroscopy. And in Lebanon, where there are 3 or 4 doctors that can perform a good capillaroscopy, and that they can help us to make the diagnosis. So what is this? So when we ask about anti-nuclear antibodies, in the lab, they speak about immunofluorescence. And the immunofluorescence, the pattern of immunofluorescence is important for us. If it's homogeneous, we might think of systemic lupus. If it is speckled, we can think, like this photo here, we can think about antibody anti-centromere. Okay. And if ANI are positive, more than 1 over 160, and the immunofluorescence is speckled, the second step, what I should order, is antibodies, the ENA or the anablot, and the ENA or anablot, to see if the patient has anti-RO, anti-SCM, anti-SL70, anti-RNP, the other autoantibodies that can guide me to the connective tissue disease. And the techniques that are used, there are many techniques, but the most used in practice is the autoimmune technique with dot blot, like we will see now. So what are the 2 types of autoantibodies that are most important in the management of systemic scleroderma patient? Okay, A and C, excellent, A and C. And the autoantibodies that are specific to scleroderma, in limited systemic scleroderma, it is anti-centromere, which we can find in 80% of the patient. And in diffuse systemic scleroderma, we have to look to anti-topoisomerase 1 or anti-SCL70, which is present in only 50% of the patient. So the second message is the following. Whenever if the patient does not have a positive autoantibody, this does not rule the autoimmune disease. It's like a film. When we are managing connective tissue disease, it's a film. We have to follow up the patient. With time, the antibodies can become positive. So this is the, and now what's new in this field is the autoimmune panel for scleroderma patients. So there is a panel that they can do whenever you have an anti-SCL70 positive or anti-centromere positive. You can ask for this panel, and I will show you what is the importance of this panel. Okay, if we have the anti-centromere, you know we have what we used to call CREST. So it is a localized systemic scleroderma. If you have the anti-SCL70s, we have diffuse systemic scleroderma. And these patients, we have to follow them to check if they will develop interstitial lung disease. If they have the anti-ARN polymerase 3, we have to follow them for a kidney problem. These patients, in particular, should avoid taking steroids, whatever is the reason. In general, when a patient has some arthralgia, we have the tendency to put him on steroids. These patients should never, if you are obliged to give them steroids, should never have a dose more than 10 milligrams. If they have anti-PM-SCL, these patients might have more muscular problem. Antifibrillarine, we should follow their heart and lung, and anti-B23, they are more prone to develop pulmonary arterial hypertension. So this is new in the field of autoantibodies regarding systemic scleroderma. So which exams are recommended for the screening of her lung disease? If you go back to Carol, what are the exams that you want to use if you want to see if you want to evaluate her lung? What would you use? Session yali shiftuha qabel bishwaye. Donc CT scan, okay, what else? Quelques pneumos, donc PFT are very important for you, مثل EKG لله. Donc PFT, chest CT, and cardiac echography is very important in the evaluation of these patients. So now I leave the floor to my friend, Dr. Yeshe, who will talk about these two important tests in the managing of these patients.
Thank you. So, to continue the case, this is the chest X-ray that showed subtle abnormalities. This is the CT scan. We see very well that there is an interstitial lung disease on both sides, especially on the bases. And if we perform the pulmonary function test, we have the vital capacity, which shows a value about 89%, and the DLCO was 48.8%. The ratio FEV1 over FVC was normal. So when we asked her to exercise with the 6-minute walking test, she succeeded to have a distance of 250 meters, 60% of the predicted. And if we go back to see the definition of the ILD in systemic sclerosis, the recent classification updated in 2015, we see very well that the connective tissue disease can be defined in the ILD, but we should rule out other disease. And this connective tissue disease has a pattern, radiological pattern and histological patterns that can be totally different. It can take the shape of a UIP, it can take the shape of a NSIP, DIP, and so on. So we have a pattern of a restrictive disease. It's a marker of pulmonary fibrosis. On physical exam, we had bibasilar crackles, but pay attention, in connectivitis, in connective tissue disease, it's a late onset physical exam. It's not like the idiopathic disease. And some patients will have anti-topoisomerase 1 antibody. So it's very important to keep in mind two subgroups of systemic sclerosis: the diffuse one, which we will have more ILD, and the limited disease, the limited systemic sclerosis, this one we should search the pulmonary hypertension, which is more common in this limited subgroup. And we need to search for this pulmonary hypertension, because if we don't search for it, we will not find it. And in some studies, we have a pulmonary hypertension that reached 40% of patients suffering from scleroderma. And these patients, because they have limited disease, their disease is subtle compared to the diffuse one. We should keep in mind this pulmonary hypertension should be searched with all what we dispose. Why? Because it can affect the mortality, it can affect the prognosis of these scleroderma patients. And the increased risk to develop this pulmonary hypertension, as we said before, a disease which is limited. Second, a long-lasting renal, more than 10 years, and an anti-centromere antibodies, which is totally in contrast with the decreased risk with the anti-SCL 770, which will be leading more for the ILD profile. So we'll be managing in pulmonary hypertension three type of disease. The type one that we know very well, the group one of pulmonary hypertension, which is isolated pulmonary hypertension without ILD, the group one. We can face with scleroderma a patient who is suffering from ILD and a secondary pulmonary hypertension, which will be the type three. But we can see also patients that have both the 1 and 3, this will be a combined group where there is vascular and fibrotic pathologic process. This will be the case of a very slowly scleroderma patients. With time, he will be developing hypoxemia, but there is a vasculopathy behind this hypoxia that's secondary to ILD. So this is a table to help us differentiate between group 1 and group 3. If we try to see the ventilatory function in both groups, normally we are searching for the FVC, and in the FVC, we should be searching if it's more or less than 70%. If it's less than 70%, we'll be directing our reflection to group 3. If it's more, it's group 1. Second, we should be searching for lesions on CT scan, surely. And at the end, we should be searching for any circulatory reserve or ventilatory reserve to try to differentiate if we are dealing with a group 1 or a group 3 patients. So our third message is search pulmonary hypertension if you are dealing with scleroderma, which is long-standing, limited disease with renal, anti-centromere antibodies, a dyspnea which is disproportionate to CT severity, if we have a high B2, a DLCO which is disproportionately low compared to vital capacity, but pay attention, we cannot confirm the diagnosis at this point. We need to go further with other tests, echocardiography and right heart catheterization. I'll give the floor to Dr. Haddad to continue.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Yeshe. So we'll illustrate by a second case. This is Jana case. Jana is a 30-year-old woman, was diagnosed with limited cutaneous systemic sclerosis 3 years ago. At the time of diagnosis, she had suffered from renal phenomena for 4 years and recurrent fingertip ulcers during the last 2 winter sessions. So this is a usual story of these patients. Okay. At the physical exam, she has 2 small inactive ulcers at the tips of the 3rd and 4th fingers of the left hand, puffy fingers again, a total modified Rodnan skin score of 9, and no telangiectasia on the face. So if you go back to the same table, we see that she will have, if we add points, she will have also 8 points. So we need to perform other tests, such as capillaroscopy or antibodies or CT scan. So tests to orders are the ANI profile, the nail fold capillaroscopy, and we have to do a transthoracic echography to see the right ventricular systolic pressure, which is important, and the lung function test with DLCO. And Dr. Yeshe stressed upon the DLCO because we might have normal lung function with a low DLCO, and this should alert us to search for a pulmonary arterial hypertension. And of course, the high resolution CT scan. So in Jana, the test we had, she has an ANA of very high, and the anti-centromere antibodies were positive, the immunofluorescence was speckled, anti-topoisomerase were negative, and all the extracted nuclear antibodies were also negative. We performed a nail fold capillaroscopy, which showed a reduced capillary density with dilated and giant capillaries, 2 microhemorrhages, and a few avascular areas, and this pattern is highly suggestive of systemic scleroderma in this patient. And a PFT was performed by Dr. Rieschi, which showed normal lung volumes, but the DLCO was a little bit low, around 68%. The high-resolution CT scan demonstrate mild, very mild pathologic findings. Just like the previous speaker showed us, we can have some mild changes before we have problems in the PFT. The transthoracic echocardiography showed an estimated RVSP, right ventricular systolic pressure, around 32, which is normal. We consider 40 is a limit for the diagnosis. So at that time, we prescribed for her nifedipine and paraffin bath for her ulcers, and we advised her to avoid cold. So Jana responded well to this symptomatic treatment. The intensity and frequency of renal attacks were considerably less, and she did not develop digital ulcers during the following years. But as I've told you, these patients should be followed because it is like a story, like a film. And we added, of course, a PPI because she has the problem of reflux. And at the first 2 annual follow-up visits, So we saw her in 2014 and 2015, no evidence of progression of Lana's systemic scleroderma. So her modified Rodnan skin score was the same, around 9. Her lung function test, normal lung volume, but her DLCO is 49%. So there is this drop of more than 10%. And whenever we have a drop, if it is well done, if the PFT is well done, and we have a drop of more than 10%, this is very, very significant, and we are obliged to check for the pulmonary arterial hypertension. Still, her right ventricular systolic pressure was between 28 and 33. So on the echocardiography, it was normal, and her chest X-ray was normal. So this was in 2014 and 15. In 2016, at the third annual follow-up, the patient reported shortness of breath when climbing stairs. She noted these symptoms 12 weeks before the follow-up appointment. So during the 3 months, she has this exacerbation. And dyspnea had progressed since then. On physical exam, we have a slightly accentuated pulmonary component of the B2, which can signify a high pulmonary arterial pressure, and lung sounds were normal. So what is the rationale for this regular screening for pulmonary arterial hypertension in patients with systemic scleroderma? Why do we tell our patient we have to follow up with you every 6 months or every year at least in order to detect the pulmonary arterial hypertension very early? Why it is important? First, it's highly prevalent. So 1/3 of the patient will develop this complication. Second, there is a lack of early clinical symptoms. The patient, as we all know, in COPD, they get used to the dyspnea. So they can walk slowly, they will not feel the dyspnea. So there is a lack of early clinical symptoms, and it is associated with a very poor prognosis whenever we have high pulmonary arterial hypertension, and now there is an availability of effective therapies. So this slide shows the importance of the early diagnosis. These are patients who have been diagnosed. They have divided patients into patients that are screened very regularly every 6 months and patients who are not screened. And we can see that the mortality is really higher in the group of scleroderma patients which are not screened regularly, especially for pulmonary arterial hypertension. So the long-term outcome is very bad in these patients who are not screened. So how can we detect early? I said that the second challenge is to detect early the pulmonary arterial hypertension. So how can we do this? First, step one, there is the clinical telangiectasia, uric acid, and the NT-proBNP, and the anti-centromere antibodies. The EKG, the regular EKG, which can show right axis deviation, and of course the pulmonary function test with the DLCO and the discrepancy between DLCO and the normal lung volume. If the score is more than 300, then we can move to the step two, and the step two will show, we will do an echocardiography, and we will ask the cardiologist to check for the right atrium area and the tricuspid regurgitation velocity. And this has been stressed yesterday by Gallier when he talked about the importance of these two parameters in detecting the pulmonary arterial hypertension. And if the score is more than 35, at this level, we should refer the patient to do the right heart catheterization in order to confirm the diagnosis. So that's how we detect very early the pulmonary arterial hypertension if we follow these guidelines. So these are the tables that we can use. So second question is who should be screened? What are the risk factors for the development of pulmonary arterial hypertension? We said that 1/3 of the patient will develop the pulmonary arterial hypertension. Who are these patients? I should follow up very closely. So the first answer is pulmonary arterial hypertension can occur in all disease stages. Usually, it can occur after many years, but it can occur at the beginning of the disease, in the early stage of the disease, at the middle stage of the disease, and at the after 10 years of the disease. And it can occur in all disease subsets, even those who have anti-topoisomerase also. The 2015 recommendation suggests that patients with systemic scleroderma, but without any clinical symptoms, without obvious symptoms, should be screened yearly by transthoracic echocardiography to facilitate the early detection and intervention. So every year you should collaborate with a cardiologist who is interested in the right ventricle. Most of the cardiologists are interested in the left ventricle and in the coronaries. Few of them are interested in performing a test for the right ventricle. So who should be screened? Pulmonary arterial hypertension can develop in all disease stages. Pulmonary arterial hypertension can be the presenting symptom of systemic scleroderma. Some of these patients have been diagnosed. It was a presentation symptom. But most frequently, it develops at later stages. And the subgroup of people that we should follow very closely is the people who have anti-centromere antibodies. And the second group is the group who have the DLCO, which is low, or which has fallen by more than 10% after 1 year with normal lung volumes. So what are the best screening tests? What would you use to screen your patient? True. Okay, excellent. So the best available for screening is still the transthoracic echocardiography, but it is to be noted that we might have also high percentage of false positive or false negative when we are doing the transthoracic echocardiography alone. And this is because of the threshold that we have put for the right ventricular systolic pressure. If you put it at 40, we might diagnose. If we put it at 35, we might diagnose more, but we will be less specific. If we put it at 45, we will diagnose less, but we will be more specific. So the threshold is considered above 40 positive. So what are the additional tests that we can use? We can use a stress Doppler echocardiography. It helps more than the regular echocardiography. And as we saw yesterday with Professor Gallier, we can use also the NT-proBNP. Of course, the NT-proBNP is used especially for the prognostic factors, as a prognostic factors, but we can also use it as a screening test, especially if we add it to the lung function test, including the DLCO. So, again, I will leave the floor to Dr. Yeshi.
So, we'll be continuing. Independent of the screening tool that we will be choosing to follow your scleroderma patient, you need to proceed to confirm the diagnosis. At this stage, our patients have a positive screening test. So what do you suggest? Can we start endothelin receptor antagonist treatment? Can we start PDE5 inhibitors? Right heart catheterization? Repeat echocardiography after 3 months? What do you suggest? Sure. So don't rely on the screening tool. It's a tool to help us to arrive to this moment, perform the right heart catheterization. So as it was advocated, in patients with suspected pulmonary hypertension, the right heart catheterization is the direct measurement of pulmonary hemodynamics, which is necessary to confirm the diagnosis. It's important to have a definitive diagnosis to decide to start all the treatments, which are so expensive, and these patients should be followed very regularly. So what about this catheterization? It can be done in a setting, an intensive care setting, or otherwise. It should be performed by expert physicians, so it will be done patients with he will stay awake and will be passing the catheter in the right atrium, to the right ventricle, to the pulmonary artery, and push the catheter till a branch to the pulmonary artery, and then perform the measures. First measure to be done is the mean pulmonary arterial pressure, that which should be more than 25 to talk about an increased pulmonary hypertension. And then after doing that, we should do an acute vasoactive reactivity to see and to try to isolate this 8-10% of patients who are positive, because these patients can be responding to a specific treatment in anti-calcium channel blockers. So what's done, what's been searching in this hemodynamics is, first of all, the mean PAP, more than 25, and it's not sufficient to confirm that it is a primary disease. We should prove that the wedge pressure is less than 15, and also the pulmonary vascular resistance is more than 3 Wood. These are important. The 3 criteria are important to confirm that we are dealing with a pulmonary hypertension, which is a group 1. So in our patients, we have the results. The PAP mean before NO was 39, so more than 25. After NO, it was 40, so it didn't change. The wedge pressure is 10, so less than 15. And the resistance is 5.7, and it is more than 3. So it's a clear-cut 3 criteria assured. So we are dealing with this group, pre-capillary pulmonary hypertension. So it can be group 1. It can be also group 3, chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension group 4, and the miscellaneous group 5. So as stated in the classification, the group 1, we have the idiopathic, the irritable, drug, and the associated. And this, in this group of associated 1-4, we have the connective tissue disease, in which we are dealing with scleroderma here. So the confirmation has been done. 2 conditions still to be excluded. Is there any interstitial lung disease upon that with the CT? And is there any chronic thromboembolic disease associated? And this can be done with a lung scan, ventilation perfusion lung scan. So if we need to know better about the different paraclinical way to confirm the function of the right ventricle, we can be using, sure, the catheter. It is important to measure the pressure. It can be done with the echocardiography to measure the tricuspid regurgitation. MRI can be helpful in some cases, not in all cases. So if we can summarize, a patient who has scleroderma, 40% will not have any disease, and there is 20% will have ILD alone, 20% will have pulmonary hypertension alone, and 20% will have both ILD and pulmonary hypertension. Sure, the patients who have pulmonary hypertension with ILD has the worst prognosis. Survival will be worse if we are comparing ILD with pulmonary hypertension compared to pulmonary hypertension alone, without ILD, well confirmed. Now that we have the diagnosis and we confirm that it is from group 1, what is, in your opinion, the risk profile of this patient? Are we dealing with a patient who is stable and satisfactory, or is it stable but not satisfactory, or is unstable and not satisfactory? How we can proceed to know what to do with our patient?
The next step in our clinical reasoning, when we are in front of this patient, the next step, I want to stratify this patient. Is he stable or not?
So the ECS-ERS guidelines in 2015 clarified this issue, and we need to use all we have as parameters in one time to try to see if the patient is at low risk of mortality, intermediate risk of mortality, I mean the mortality will be between 5 and 10, or is at high risk of mortality more than 10. So for that, we need to use the clinical signs. Is there any progression of symptoms, syncope, the functional status, how is dyspneic on efforts, the 6-minute walking test, and so on, the BNP, the echocardiography, and even the hemodynamics. So it's very important to classify our patients every time he is in the green field, yellow field, or he is in the red field. And our aim in the treatment and when taking in charge these patients is to transform the patient who is in the intermediate case to the low risk, if he is in the high risk to the intermediate risk, and if we can do better to pass him to the low risk, that will be our aim in the treatment. So in our patients, there was no clinical signs of right heart failure, but there was a progression in symptoms, no syncope, the functional status was 3, 250 meter of 6-minute walking test, BNP was 280, the TAPSE was 1.8, and the hemodynamics showed a cardiac output of 2.7. So she was classified as a yellow region. And the take hospital message, I'll let Dr. Haddad give you his message.
Thank you, Dr. Rieshi. So our final slides are the following. Pulmonary arterial hypertension contributes significantly to the morbidity and mortality of patients with systemic scleroderma. So this is very important to know, and I think you know it. And second message, it can occur in all stages and subsets of systemic scleroderma. Of course, more particularly in patient who has anti-centromer antibody, older patient, and decreasing the LCO. The regular screening, the second message is regular screening of this patient. We can't leave this patient and tell them to come back after 2 years. We have to, every 4 months to see this patient, every 6 months to do a transthoracic echocardiography, and to accept to do the right heart catheterization very frequently. Regular screening tests for pulmonary arterial hypertension are warranted since clinical symptoms, including dyspnea, are unspecific and can occur late in the course of pulmonary arterial hypertension, and more also, we should know that there are more effective therapies that are available. Yesterday, also Professor Galli have spoken about the importance of combination therapy from the start of the diagnosis. Whenever we diagnose the patient, we can start him on combination therapies. And the most widely used screening tool is still the transthoracic echocardiography, in spite of some false positive and false negative in this test. So that's why your expertise is very important in this patient. And whenever you have anything that is not clear in your mind, you can go easily to right heart catheterization, which is not a very invasive test.
And I'll add on that, the lung function is so important. Don't forget the DLCO. We can be helped with the BNP level and surely the echocardiography. It's important to do the right heart catheterization. Don't forget it, it's a must. The classification concepts of pulmonary hypertension, we are following it these last 10 years, and it's evolving, and we understand a lot about this disease. The Serafini study has set a new standard in pulmonary arterial hypertension trial design. We are talking more and more about morbidity and mortality concept, as was said yesterday. Pay attention how to do the risk assessment concept, mild, moderate, and severe prognosis, and keep in mind when to have a combination treatment, when to use a mono treatment, and this has been well discussed yesterday in the symposium. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Dr. Haddad and Dr. Yashi, for this outstanding presentation. And now the floor is open for your questions.
Thank you, both of you, for this, as you said, very elegant and outstanding presentation. I have a question to Dr. Diashi. Why didn't you perform a right heart cath in 2015 when the DLCO was starting to drop down and the TTE was normal? Why didn't you perform right heart cath?
He was not yet on board. He was on board, we did the right heart catheterization.
It's important. We learned a lot about this case and the recommendation of the pulmonary hypertension detection, the tool that has been discussed, is new. So we didn't know in the past with the subtle radiological finding and the DLCO if it's related to the ILD or it's related to pulmonary hypertension. And at that moment, the echocardiography was still normal. So that's why I think that the treating physician, didn't ask about to proceed further in the diagnosis.
Yes, that's why it's important to have a high index of suspicion, because the early clinical signs do not exist. The patient usually does not.
She was asymptomatic.
Yes, she was asymptomatic. And the right ventricular systolic pressure performed by the echocardiographers, which are not interested, I repeat it. Now we have some echocardiographs, some cardiologists who are interested to perform the right ventricular pressures. But usually, if you go back, you look to the echocardiography in 2010 and 12, they are interested only in fraction ejection and valvular problems. So it's rarely to have some parameters regarding the right ventricle. It's rare. So in your practice, do you combine usually treatments, or you use monotherapy or sequential therapy as discussed yesterday? What do you combine from the early on? And what do you usually combine?
Bosentan.
Okay. Now there is a new treatment, macitentan.
Yes.
Yesterday.
No questions, but يعني أهلنا الجمعية الطبية اللبنانية خاصة الجهاز التنفسي على هذا المؤتمر الجيد. احنا أطباء عراقيين نشكركم شكرا جزيلا على هذا المؤتمر. قدمتوه من أفكار علمية ومنهج جيد وبارك الله بكم.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just want to thank you all for your participation, and we'll see you next year. Thank you all.